You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, everybody, it is Thursday, August 17th, 2023. And it is indeed a heck of a morning. We are live on the MMA Fighting Twitter space. We are live in Boston, Massachusetts, the site of Saturday's UFC 292 event. Boots on the ground, myself and Jose representing the fine folks at MMAfighting.com. It's nice to do a media day yesterday. Hadn't been a part of a media day like that in well over a year, so it's pretty cool to be a part of that. Today, there'll be another small media day going down around 1 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be Corey Sandhagen, Rob Font, and Calvin Kattar. We get the press conference at 6 p.m. Eastern, I believe. And then tomorrow, it's all the weigh-in fun and the ceremonials, the 30th anniversary Q&A, all sorts of fun stuff. And then Saturday, I'll be off to New York for the UFC 292 watch party. So we are live here in Boston. And let's go to you guys. Let's take your questions because that's what this damn show is all about. So CV, kick us off.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes.
Good. Heck of a morning. We should call you first question, Mike. I'm seeing all the clips and I see you got all the first questions I need today. So that's pretty cool to see. Was there any fighter that stood out during yesterday's interviews? How are the vibes right now in Boston? So, thanks.
Thanks, man. The vibe is fun and crazy. More sense of the vibes later on today at the press conference. I'm curious to see how many people show up. It's at the Garden, so I'm curious to see how many people show up and what their reaction is going to be to everything. It seems like Zhang Weili and like Sean O'Malley and probably like Ian Garry, at least to me, are like the biggest pops out of anybody. But as far as who stood out at media day yesterday, Aljamain Sterling is kind of always stands out to me. He's just sort of super honest and keeps things pretty real. I thought Sean O'Malley did a lot of the same. Ian Machado Garry is just, that dude is just such a character. And it's him. He's a character just in like name only, because he's not a phony baloney. You know what I mean? This isn't a character he's portraying. This is him. This is him, a very confident, brash, but very intelligent young dude who is on a great path right now. So those guys stood out. And I think in their own ways, everybody sort of stood out. Hearing like Mario Batista's reaction to Cody Garbrandt having to pull out of the fight, the tough guys. Hearing from like Brad Katona and all the crap he took all season. It's just, it was interesting all around, but yeah, obviously a lot to take away from the main eventers, Ian Garry, even Marlon Vera's super fun. Pedro Munhoz had a little sass to him, which I enjoyed. It was a good time. It was a good time. Let's go to Four Corner Sports. What's up, Four Corner Sports?
Hey, Mike, how's it going? How are you enjoying your old stomping grounds so far?
I'm enjoying it, my man.
Any Red Sox games you're attending while you're up there, or Red Sox are away?
Nah, they're in town Sunday, but they're in Washington.
That's unfortunate. I gotta say, I don't know. I was listening to Aljo's scrum, and I felt that I don't know if it was wise to him to keep constantly saying that this might be his final fight and stuff like that. Because if he's not a good gracing with the UFC and he wins the fight on Saturday, why not just, keep it out there? Like, as he's speculating, not sure. Because, the thing with Francis is, remember how he, held on to the title until the very last moment, and then he announced that he's a free agent, and then he ended up signing with the PFL? Well, why doesn't Aljo just, hold on to the title and forces the UFC's hands and saying, hey, I'm going to fight at 145 champ versus champ, as opposed to him just saying, this is going to be my final fight. And, the UFC would strip him of the title just because he's not in good gracing with them. Just because the UFC will try to make sure they can, you know, book an immediate bantamweight title fight, just because they never really got along. As for the Zhang Weili, I loved your picks. No bets barred. I agree with the whole violence parlay. Think Zhang might be able to get this done in two. Might just try to test the waters in round one, and then in round two, I think we might see something that she might try to replicate when she ended up fighting Ioane and Jacek. All right, thanks, Mike. Have a good one.
Thanks, man. Yeah, very good. Look, I appreciate Amanda Lemos's confidence as well. But I think Zhang Weili is going to win that fight, probably. But who knows? Crazy things continue to happen in this sport, and we may get two big upsets in these title fights, and nothing would surprise me at this point. No, and the other thing with Sterling, no, I don't think he really needs to keep anything close to the best. I mean, he's been talking about a move to 45 for a long time. He's been talking about getting his teammate a shot, and it's not about business anymore. It's about getting Merab his opportunity and him breaking all the records. Like, he said something else he said that stood out was he got to sit down, him and his team, with the UFC brass, and he said it was a really good meeting. So we'll kind of see how the promotion handles it. I'm not sure how the pressure is going to work today, if it's going to be John Anik, if it's going to be Dana up there. Curious to see how they interact with each other, Dana and Aljamain, how both of them talk about one another at the post-fight press conference. But no, I mean, I don't think Aljamain needs to be like, well, maybe I'll stay at bantamweight. No, he's done enough. And if he beats Sean O'Malley and breaks the record, there's nothing more he needs to do. So, and I do think they're going to move forward this division, because you kind of have to. There's just so many guys who are worthy of title shots. We got to move the. So, yeah, I don't necessarily agree with that. Let's go to Toke. What's up, Toke?
I'm going to talk about some real news. So Raul Rosas finally got booked for UFC Noche against Terrence Mitchell, which I think, again, seems like a properly matched. That seems like a proper matchup for him at where he is in his career. Very, very young, not really catapulting him anywhere. This seems like a good step in his development. So I wanted you to talk a bit about that. And then I want you to make me smarter. So this, for UFC Abu Dhabi, this man, this fighter, who looks more like a Baldur's Gate character than a human being, this guy with two different colored eyes that got added to the card, why are they fast-tracking him so much? This guy, so he's newly signed and just gets basically a fight that if he wins it, he's in the top 15. So can you kind of talk about those two things? Thank you.
Are you talking about Magomedov?
Yes, sir. I forgot about his first name, and then I just decided to describe him as a Baldur's Gate character.
So, yeah, Sharabutin is just really, really good. He's super good. Dude is a finishing machine. I think only like one. Has he gone to a decision in an MMA fight? Maybe one? Yeah, maybe. He's just really good. And he's 29, so they feel like they have something here. And slowly but surely, middleweight is becoming a very interesting division with Khamzat obviously there and Ikram Alaskarov. Charabut and Magomedov's another guy. It's going to be a crazy fight. And I think that's kind of the reason why they put this one together. And plus, Bruno Silva's just game as hell. So he's going to take these opportunities, whether it's against newcomers or five-fight vets, all of that fun stuff. So, yeah, that fight is going to be absolutely insane. It's going to be absolutely nuts. Middleweight needs non-middleweighty middleweights, and he is one of those non-middleweighty middleweights. YVMZ, hello.
Hey, Mike. Heck of a morning. I just had two quick questions for you. For the judging, I wanted to see if you think this resolution would be an answer to all the bad judging that goes on. Would it be okay? Do you think there's a world where the fighters could possibly challenge the decision? So, like, let's just say it was a controversial decision. They could challenge it there on the spot, kind of like football. Wanted to get your thoughts on that. And two, was there anybody on the Contender Series that stood out to you? Thanks so much.
So I did not watch a single second of Contender Series on Tuesday. I really wish I watched that main event. To see Hardwick get swept on the cards was pretty wild. So I kind of want to go back and watch that performance. But as I predicted on Tuesday, we're going to get four, probably five contracts. Even the dude who missed weight got a contract. So as I predicted, the threshold for that show is zero. All you have to do is get on the show, and all you have to do is win, and you get yourself a contract. Now, I'm not saying that they shouldn't have gotten three or four given out on this card. I think this crop as a whole was better than week one. But still, like, this is what we're going to expect on the Contender Series. It's going to be four, five contracts. Sometimes we're going to get six contract nights on this season because someone is going to lose a really fun fight and they're just going to give them a contract. And we understand what this is. We totally understand what this is at this point. And then the judging thing, challenging a card, you can't really do that. You can't really do that because it's how are you going to do it? Do you have to sit and wait for the judge to like rewatch the fight on the broadcast? Like, it just seems like these events are long enough as they are. There's 15 fights on every single card. Now, potentially you could be adding a bunch of time to these broadcasts that we don't really need. So to me, it's always been very simple. It's not just cage side. We put these judges, if they want to put them cage side, you put them in a box, like, you know, kind of a curtain type thing. You put a monitor in there with a member of the commission. They wear noise canceling headphones and they watch the fight. They don't get to hear the crowd. They don't get to hear the commentary. They watch the fight from their private little area with no audio and no sound. And that's the best way for them to judge fights. Now, they're not going to do that because you want to have that cage side experience, but if you've gone to a UFC event or gone to an MMA event and you sit up close, you know how hard it is to like see all the angles of a cage that has multiple shapes like that? It's not easy to do. So I don't envy these judges. I really don't. It's a thankless job. You never get praise for a good card. You get shit on for like every card people deem as a robbery, which is a lot. And it's just a tough job. Are there really bad, like, there are certain cards, like Tony Weeks this past Saturday, Jacqueline Amorim with two clear 10-8 rounds in the first two rounds of her win, and Tony Weeks gave her 10-9s. Like, you don't need a balcony seat to understand that those should have been 10-8 rounds. So there are definitely differences. There's some bad cards for sure, but yeah, challenging it, it's not really going to work. You just got to change the whole structure. You got to just try things. I remember CFFC tried something where they had three judges sitting cage side, and then they had three judges in a back room with noise-canceling headphones who watched the fight from the back with no audio and no commentary, no crowd sound, and they were going to test and see what their cards looked like compared to the ones cage side. And we never really got an answer to that or any sort of scientific reasoning behind it or the results or anything. And it was like, never tried again. Why not? I feel like that's the best answer to all of this is you take them out of that element. You could still have them cage side, but just don't listen to the crowd because the crowd can – you've seen certain fights. Like anytime Diego Sanchez fought during those runs and he won those split decisions – anytime he threw a punch, the crowd went crazy, even if he missed by 418 feet. And sometimes that was enough to sway a judge to score a fight for him. So, Yeah, that is not the answer. Open scoring to me is also not the answer, but that's a conversation we've had a million times. It will be for a definite different time down the road because we're not going to have it here. Just going to try to get D. Jimmy in, but we're getting the Wheel of Doom, as we typically do on these shows. So if you guys want to step in, you guys have questions, go ahead. Please line up. And we will get to all of you. Here's what you guys think of this 292 card as a whole right now, because the excitement levels are very, very high. I'm not saying they're not high, but we obviously have taken some hits on this card. We lost Rob Font Songy Dong. We lost Cody Garbrandt. We lost Jeff Neal. We lost Henry Cejudo. This card would look a lot different. But still, we have a nice, tight 12 fights. Two title fights. I like the Machado-Gary Magny fight. Vera Munoz, to me, is going to be a good one. Damon Blackshear's a really interesting story, turning around on 7 days' notice after getting the third twister in UFC history. No one's talking about Chris Weidman's return, which is crazy to me. We're going to get two middleweight fights that are probably not going to be middleweighty middleweight fights. And we get Natty Ice against Andrea Lee, and we get Marina Moroes versus Karina Silva. This is a pretty good card. Is it going to be like a 700,000 pay-per-view buy card? Absolutely not, but it's going to be a fun one. It's going to be a fun watch. Daniel, hello.
Hey, Mike. Heck of a morning to you. I'm pretty excited for the card for the most part. I mean, the main card is all right. I feel like it did lose a couple fights like you had mentioned, but I think it's still holding together strong, and having O'Malley as the top name on a card in Boston just feels right. So, but I do just kind of want your opinion here, just to change topics, just on the Ultimate Fighter. I mean, what were kind of just your thoughts on how this season played out, just how they really did, just veterans versus prospects, and, you know, it ended up literally just being completely all veterans versus all prospects. And just kind of what do you think of, like, the actual finales now that we have it? Like, do you think Brad Katona is going to be the first two-time tough champion? I'm not sure what that really means. And then, you know, how you think that Holler or the Hollabaugh versus the Austin Hubbard fight goes. That's all I got, though, Mike. Thank you.
Thanks, man. The show is just – my issue is just the format has not changed in forever. It's the same thing, and it's brutal. And they try all these different things. They try veterans versus prospects. They try the comeback seasons. They try the live seasons. They try all these different things, and it's the same show. Not even Conor McGregor can help the show. It's just not good. It's just the same thing. Here's what happened in the house. Here's what happened at training. Oh, now they're going to make weight. Now they're going to fight. And that's the show. There's going to be a coach's challenge that is going to be weird and silly. It's the same. We got the basketball jerseys still for the 400th consecutive season. Like, mix it up a little bit. Throw on a hockey jersey or something. Do something. It's just all the same. I'm sure the ratings aren't going to be great. I'm sure overall it's not going to do as well as they thought. I'm sure maybe on social media it does very well, because anytime you get Connor involved, it's going to do big numbers. But yeah, like, maybe if you do veterans versus prospects, and this is no disrespect to any of the quote-unquote prospects on the show, at least do prospects. Like, to me, a prospect is like 30 or younger, not 34, 35, 36 or older. You know what I mean? Like, I think the 34, 35, 36-year-olds, those types of guys who want one last shot, these are the ones you throw on the contender series. And then these up-and-comers, these 20, 21, 22-year-olds, the 4-0 fighters and all that, like, don't put those guys in the contender series. Put them on the Ultimate Fighter. Like, those are the types of prospects we want to see on the show. We want to see who can deal with the pressure. Do it. Like, no one wanted to see Brad Katona go through the Ultimate Fighter for the second time. It just, no one wanted to see it. No one wanted to see it. Not even his own teammates wanted to see it. But I like the matchups. Cody Gibson, Brad Katona. Brad Katona is really fun in that Timur Valiyev fight. I didn't think he won that fight, but it was a fun one. Cody Gibson has looked real good. And these two guys just, like, don't like each other. Cody Gibson is not a Brad Katona fan. And He called Brad Katona the most boring tape study of his career. Going back and watching Brad Katona film, he said it was pretty much an awful experience. So that should be a fun one. And Kurt Hollibaugh, Austin Hubbard's going to go one of two ways. Either Kurt's just going to kill him in 3 minutes, or Austin Hubbard's going to win a decision. That's how I see that fight playing out. And if you listen to No Bets Barred, I actually have one of the bets on Austin Hubbard by decision. So we'll see how that plays out. Honey Bee in LV. Hello.
Hello. I had a.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hello. Yep. Good morning.
Good. Good morning.
I have done some research in Mr. Weidman, and I wanted to ask a question for you. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. I did some study on his injury, and I just wanted to get a take on his training. I've been looking in his Instagram. He seems to be coming back, but I can't get a read on his speed. And I noticed some of the comments were calling him old man. I think he's a value at plus 210, but I'm not really sure how the injury is going to translate. The bone can either grow back stronger or weaker. And I was just wondering how you would evaluate his training and where you would look to find out how he's coming back.
It's a really interesting question. And we talked, so just to peel back the curtain, there'll be no video BTL this week. But we did do like an in-person one after media day yesterday. So this was after we left the media room, we went over to where Jose is staying and sat in the lobby. It's me, Jose, and Oscar Willis from the Mac Life. Just basically hit record and put microphones in our hands and just started yapping. And one of the things you brought up was this fight and the questions surrounding Chris's return and why no one's really talking about it. And I think one of the reasons why is we're kind of viewing this fight because of the return and the injury, almost like we're viewing any Tony Ferguson fight at this point. Like we have the palm of our hands on our face, but we're like looking in between our fingers just to make sure everything's okay. And that's kind of how we're feeling about this fight right now. Like what's Chris going to look like if he throws a kick? What's going to happen to Brad? If Brad Tavares kicks him in the leg, like how is he going to deal with that? How is he going to deal with the movement? And I would love to be able to give you some insight and some answers on that. But even if I watch Chris Weidman train on a mat right now and he's moving around, he's running a 4.440, that's great. That's positive. But until he actually gets into that cage after a bunch of dudes have already fought and the crowd and the atmosphere and being that cage door locking behind you, what's going to go through his mind at that point? Is he going to have that same excitement? Is he going to get flashbacks of what happened in the Uriah Hall fight? There's so many questions. I understand the value on Chris Weidman. If you listen to No Bets Barred, I think all of us backed Weidman. And I actually have a bet on Chris Weidman by decision. It's plus 500. And I feel like if Chris is going to win, that's how he's going to win. That's how he's going to win. I don't know, Brad, outside of just a gnarly injury, I don't know if Brad Tavares could finish Chris Weidman. Brad Tavares hasn't had a knockout win in a long time. And I feel like the longer this goes, it gets a little grimy. And I feel like this is kind of like Chris Weidman's world. It ain't always pretty. But to me, this is going to look very similar to the Omari Akhmadov fight, where maybe Tavares wins the first round, but I think Weidman just kind of realizes I just got to tackle this dude and lay on top of him. And I know Brad Tavares has pretty good takedown defense when he's on, but he's also very susceptible to being taken down. I'm like a high-level wrestler, and I know Weidman is not in his athletic prime anymore, but Weidman knows how to get a fight to the ground, and he knows how to keep it there. So I don't think we're going to be talking about this fight in the fight of the year conversation. Nowhere near it, but I feel like if Chris Weidman just shows up, like just regular healed up Chris Weidman, I think it's enough to beat Brad Tavares. I do. So I think there's a ton of value on Weidman in this fight, and I feel like there's a ton of value on the prop by decision. Plus 500, I'll take the extra juice and take a shot on him. I think it's good matchmaking. Leone, hello. Leone? right, it's not getting through. How about Riley? Hey, Riley.
Morno in the UFC. He's fighting Gerald this weekend. I was just wondering what you think could be next for him if he gets a win, seeing as his most recent loss is, in amateur, he lost to Brian Battle, but before that, he lost to Aaron Jeffrey, who is obviously doing really well in Bellator. And then secondly, do you think there's any chance that, seeing as it's the Ultimate Fighter finale on Saturday, that McGregor Chandler gets announced for December? Thanks, Mike. Have a good one.
Would be nice if it did. I actually thought we were going to get that announcement on the actual show, because the few people in the world who are like my best friend, Alexander Cayley, who watch like every minute of every week, that should have been, they deserve to that payoff at the end of just a really tough season to watch, and they didn't get it. So it could happen. I know Brad Katona has said in recent interviews that he thinks Connor's actually going to be there. We'll see. I know Chandler's going to be there. Be pretty cool to announce the fight on that card. I mean, Connor's had some good history in the Garden. Be a good little spot to announce it, but who the hell knows at this point? Who the hell knows? I would I'd love to see that. Leone, do we have you? Yeah, you gotta. It's not working. You have to like bounce out and try again. It's not even letting me bring you in right now. Let's go to Drew. What's up, Drew?
Hey, what's up, Mike? You know, in a fight this weekend, we have two polar opposites in the main event, really. You know, Sterling's game plan, it seems to be made clear. Just get O'Malley to the ground, and O'Malley said he'll die on the fact that he wants to keep this fight standing. I wanted to see what you thought about the recent judging, how, you know, if Sterling takes him down, you could say, let's say Sterling has ground control for four rounds, but O'Malley lands the shots. I wanted to see what you think about that, because we've seen now judges kind of take damage over control time, which I personally am not a big fan of, as we saw with Blachowicz. But yeah, what do you think about that, and how do you think the fight's going to go? Stand on that.
Thanks, Ed. So I'll talk about Petrovsky. I forgot to talk about Petrovsky. It's a good fight. He deserves the Gerald Meerschaert rub and the test. I do actually have a bet for science purposes, no bets barred, on Gerald Meerschaert. I just think there's value at him at +220. I don't know how confident I am in that pick, but this fight's going under. This fight's not gonna last very long. It's not going to the cards. It's probably gonna last about 7 minutes at the most. And Meerschaert is really good. Like, he's so valuable in this spot, because you get the true test. Like, are you going to be a top 15 guy? If you go out there and you finish Gerald Meerschaert, yeah, you get a real good chance of being like a top 15 guy in the next year or two. But Meerschaert has showed up in these spots as well. So, and where Petrovsky would go, he keeps calling out Bo Nickel, and if I'm him, I just keep calling him out. I don't think that's the fight he's going to get, but just keep doing it. Just be that dude and keep calling out Bo. I like that a lot. With the Sterling O'Malley fight, I don't know. Because remember, we're going to get some like normal judges, but when these Boston cards happen, like, we're probably going to see my man Steve Rita refereeing a fight at some point. We're probably going to have a local judge or two being mixed in there. I don't think they'll be a part of the main event, but I honestly don't think we have to worry about this one going to the cards. I think either O'Malley's going to hit him with something big and knock him out, or Sterling's going to tackle him a bunch and eventually submit him. So I am picking Aljamain Sterling. I get a bit of exposure on Aljamain Sterling. I got a bet on Aljamain Sterling inside the distance at +175. I got a sprinkle on Aljamain Sterling in round two and Aljamain Sterling in round three. Like, very small sprinkles, but it's like +900 for round two and like +1200 for round three. And we're gonna know by then like how this fight's gonna play out. And I'm curious to see the exchanges on the feet. And Sean O'Malley's pretty confident he could take Aljamain Sterling down, which I think is pretty interesting. So it's such a fascinating fight. It's almost like it's meant to be for Sean O'Malley, but on paper, even I think Sean knows that Aljamain Sterling like should win. But there's nothing more dangerous than a guy who has nothing to lose. And to me, Sean O'Malley has nothing to lose in this fight, unless he just gets melted in 7 seconds. If Sean O'Malley loses, all he needs to do is go beat anybody, and he's going to get a title shot. That's it, because Al's just going to be out of the division. It's fresh matchups. All he needs to do is go back and win one fight. So all the pressure's on Sterling. There's some pressure on O'Malley, but not a lot. This is as close to a house money challenger situation as there can be, in my opinion. Will he get some shit from fans if he loses? Yeah, probably, but how long is that going to last? A week? And then he's going to go fight, and like I said, one more win, he's right back in there. So, Leone, hello.
Hey, what's up? So, I wanted to kind of ask about, it was kind of related to this whole fight week. So, I wanted to know, why do fighters say, like, you shouldn't have a manager? Because I have some friends in the UFC, and I see a lot of fighters saying this, and I'm an upcoming fighter myself. I don't really want to take any chances on ruining anything. So I just want to understand, like, why are people saying that? And, like, I do kind of understand because, like, you know, when you're not there yet, when you're not known, these managers kind of treat you like you're a nobody. But when you get there, I'm pretty sure they're going to start acting different. So I just want to know, like, how does that kind of go? Because for being somebody who's in this business, it's very hard to kind of get guidance from anybody who's, you know, believing a fighter is one thing, but somebody else who kind of gives like a different opinion on it or a third point of view on it or a different point of view on it would be really good. So I just kind of want to try and understand what that's about.
Thanks, man. So, yeah, this is obviously a sort of a big talking point heading into this fight. And Sean O'Malley's brought it up a lot over the last year and change about just doing things on his own. And I know Colby Covington has talked about that as well, about handling his own career. And even Aljamain Sterling, well, he does have management. It's just like you just have to – there's got to be expectations, right? There are a lot of managers in here. I have good relationships with pretty much all of them where I could text them to confirm news and all of this. And it's a pretty good relationship. Are there managers within the structure of the organization that have more pull and power? Yeah, I think it's pretty clear. I don't need to name names. I don't need to name anything. You can just do your homework and see what I'm talking about. And there are certain the power struggle behind the scenes at times is just, I hate it. And I was out with like my little brother and one of the dudes I went to high school with last night. And we're talking about kind of the darker side of the sport. And a lot of it does have to do with like how fighters feel like they're treated by management teams. And oftentimes the powerful management teams, they get a lot of fighters in the UFC. They get a lot of, you know, favors that other managers won't, but they also kind of portray a certain thing where fighters almost think that they have to work for the manager, but in reality, the manager works for the fighter. So, especially for you specifically, I'm not going to like put over any other manager over others. But I will say this, make sure you know what you're getting into and make sure you're not just getting a guy that's going to say, okay, I'm just going to send you the bout agreement I just got in my email. You want a manager that's going to go out and get you sponsors. You want a manager that's going to go and set up different opportunities for you. Look at Aljamain Sterling. Look at Aljamain Sterling and what he's doing right now. Dude's got a new rum that's launching. He's got all these different sponsorships. He's got a podcast. He's doing different advertising, all this stuff. So he's working with the team that like helps provide him all that. Now I understand not every fighter has Aljamain Sterling money at this point, but you kind of grow and you get in there. And guess what? I could just right now be like, hey, I quit MMA fighting. I'm a manager now. Like I'm an MMA manager and I could do it. Like I could do it. So that's kind of an issue too, because when you talk about like the NFL and Major League Baseball and some of the powerhouses there. Like, I can't just be a major. I can't just be like, all right, I'm a baseball agent. I'm a basketball agent. I'm a football agent. I'm a Hollywood agent. I'm Ari freaking Gold. I can't do that. But if I wanted to be an MMA manager, I could just be like, all right, I'm an MMA manager now. You're my first client. You owe me 20% of everything you make until you make it to the UFC. Ready? Shake my hand. And that's what kind of rubs people the wrong way as well. So eventually we're going to get to a point where things are tightened down a little bit, because this is a baby of a sport. And I hope we get to a place where, like, everybody's on the same page. Everybody is at equal on an equal playing field. And that's just not the way that it is. And it's not just a manager. It's with fighters, too. Like, Conor McGregor is going to get more leeway than Austin Hubbard is going to get. Just the nature of the business and the nature of the beast. So, but it's kind of like that with everybody. It's tough. It's tough. Just got to make sure the manager's looking out for your best interest. And there are some managers who are brutally honest. I've had conversations with a manager in particular about, you know, keep the circle small. Even certain fighters who, like, want me to manage them, I just say, like, I'm just brutally honest with them. Like, I don't think – they'll tell them, like, I don't think you're going to make it to the UFC. And I'm not saying that to be an asshole. I'm just telling you, like, how I view what could happen here. And maybe they rub that rubs them the wrong way. But there aren't a lot of people who are just going to tell you like it is. If I'm looking for a manager, I'm looking for that guy who's going to tell me like it is. If you think I can do this, cool. If you think I can get booked for this, awesome. But if you don't, then tell me that. And I won't get my hopes up. So it's a tough racket, man. Like, I don't want to get in any deeper, but just know what you're getting into. Have multiple conversations before you pick one and make sure they're looking out for you and give you what you're looking for or what you want. Joe, hello.
Hey, what's up, Mike? Hey, man, who do you got in Colby versus Leon? I don't know if you already spoke on it. I came in a little late today. And how do you think they match up against Bilal Muhammad, the winner? And about Sean O'Malley, do you feel like he could have had one or two more fights under his belt before Pitirian? Because I feel like he got catapulted to that position. Not saying he's not ready for it. I just feel like we would have saw a better O'Malley going into the title fight if he had that a little more five-round experience. Thanks, man.
Look, that was a win-win fight for the UFC. That was a win-win fight. Because if Piotr Jan won and got back on track and did it in Abu Dhabi, he would have came off looking like a star. If the fight was competitive, that's great for Sean O'Malley. It's great for Piotr Jan. It's great for the UFC. And if Sean O'Malley somehow beat Piotr Jan, then he gets a title shot. So I think this is more of like a Jan thing, but obviously Sean O'Malley would be crazy to not take the opportunity. So you probably would have liked to have seen him get more experience. And that's why I'm very siding with Aljamain Sterling in this fight, because I mean, the level of competition is just, there's no conversation. There is literally no discussion to be had. Sean O'Malley fought Marlon Vera, lost that fight, fought Piotr Jan, and every other guy that he's beaten is not even in the UFC anymore. It's not the first time this has happened, and it's certainly not the last. But Aljo's fought everybody. And this guy has fought a murderer's row for the last, like, 7 years. And that's how you should have booked Sean O'Malley. You're trying to build a star here. And when the UFC wants to build a star, they will do it. And they will do it very well. And they did a pretty damn good job with Sean O'Malley. So, yeah, would you have liked to see him get more experience and fight the Cody Stamens of the world and fight some of these other guys on the way up? Sure. But Sean's just kind of one of those guys that learns as he goes. And I'm sure he learned a lot during the on fight week and in the fight. He's going to learn a lot about being the main event of a pay-per-view this week, all the obligations that come with that. And if he does somehow win this title, he's going to be ready for it. And like I said earlier, if he loses, it's not it doesn't affect him that much. He'll come out. We'll see how he reacts to it. He's been saying Aljamain Sterling's the best bantamweight of all time, which is a good thing to do. Very pro wrestling like. the division will need a new champion, and it's going to need a star. And Sean's the biggest star in the division. The UFC is eventually going to find him a way to get that title, whether it's Saturday or not. They're going to keep giving him these chances. So he's going to get the experience as he goes, and he's going to get a lot of opportunities to succeed, as he's been getting, as he'll continue to get. And again, that's how you build a star. They're doing it with Bo Nickel. They did it with Khamzat Chimaev. If they want to make a star, they will do it. Simple as that. All right, we'll go for a few more minutes. So if anybody wants to hop in, go right ahead. And check out No Bets Barred. I got had some fun with the fellas. This is like one of the things I revealed on the show is I've only made one MMA bet in my life, and that was when Frankie Edgar beat BJ Penn to win the lightweight title. And it hadn't. I've never actually like placed an actual bet since then. But since they invited me on No Bets Barred, I wasn't going to be like, "Hey, you should do this," but not put my money where my mouth is. So I actually got GC sent me a message and asked me to send over my bets so he could put them on the screen during the watch party. And he was like, "Damn," because you got a bunch of action. But I'm also playing with like very little dollars here. Dylan, hello.
Hey, Mike. I don't know if I should have waited for Free For All Friday for this or not, but I'm curious. Who's the MMA community going to back in Dylan Danis versus Logan Paul? That's it.
What? I mean, they're probably going to be rooting for like a double knockout, if we're being honest. Maybe they both like slip and run into each other and just like break each other's sternums and just fall to the mat and fight's over in 30 seconds. That'd be fun. And someone asked earlier about Leon versus Colby. How do I see it playing out? I got to dive into it more. It's close, man. Like, it's real close. Because Leon is clearly the more well-rounded guy. He's got the better striking. Ground game's pretty solid. It continues to get better. But what Colby does so well, he does it so freaking well. And his striking's getting better. It's just going to be really tough to get him out of there. So to me, it's can Leon get out to such a big lead early that Colby's going to have to be in finish mode? Or is this a fight where Colby can get momentum right away? And if he starts getting that momentum at any point in that fight, it's going to be awful for Leon Edwards. It's not going to be good. So it's super tight. It's a super close fight. Right now, just off the top of my head, I would pick Leon Edwards to win that fight. But I'm not confident in that. And I think the more I watch tape and the more I look back on things, there is a world that I could certainly pick Colby Covington in that fight. It's a fight Colby can definitely win. So it'll be an interesting matchup. We'll take one more. 4-ounce sniper. Hello. Yep.
Hey, good morning. Just thought I'd hop on real quick. What do you call it? So I was just going to ask you, I heard you say you're on No Bets Barred. I just wanted to know, what is the biggest lock of the card, whether that be a fighter or a fighter prop? Maybe like an over 1.5 for the main event or something like that. What's the lock of the card? That's all, Mike.
Thanks, man. So the fight I have the most amount of exposure on, like for a single, like my biggest single bet is Zhang Weili inside the distance at -120. That's my biggest bet on the whole card. And I have Zhang as a parlay piece as well with Ian Garry and Natty Ice. And I also have a violence parlay wrapping things up under 3.5 in the Zhang Lemos fight, parodied up with the under 4.5 in the Sterling O'Malley fight. I feel very strongly about Zhang Weili. I just think she's on one right now. I just think she's the best strawweight in the world. And I think Amanda Lemos presents problems, sure. But if this fight happened 2 years ago, I might even pick Amanda Lemos. But I can't pick anybody against Zhang Weili at this point. When she gets in there with Tatiana Suarez, will I look at things a little deeper? Probably. But until that happens, I'm picking Zhang Weili confidently against pretty much everybody. I'm pretty confident in Natty Ice beating Andrea Lee. Andrea Lee is tough. I don't know if Natty gets her out of there, but I just think I think Natty Ice is really, really good. And I feel like Ian Garry is going to have a really good night at the office on Saturday against Neil Magny. I don't know. Go listen to No Bets Barred. I got a lot of action on this fight, so on this card. Not, like I said, not a lot of big dollars, just for science purposes more than anything. But I feel like I get some good value where I could get it, and let's go. And if you're going to tail anything that we talked about, go to DraftKings Sportsbook, use the code DMAR, get yourself a deal. All right, we are done. No show tomorrow? I don't know. Maybe I'll pop up at some point because we got, obviously, morning weigh-ins. I'm in Boston, so I'll be there. I might even jump on the weigh-in show with the fellas. Might even jump on the weigh-in show. Then we're going to do a preview show not long after that. I think we're going to probably shoot for like noon Eastern time to do a preview show. And then we got Q&A at the Garden. We got the ceremonial weigh-ins at the Garden. And then there's only one thing left to do after that. So maybe I'll hop in. It's like a half hour and just take questions or something. But we'll play it by ear. But I definitely wanted to make sure I got one in, got a show in today. So thank you all very much. Appreciate you. Stick with MAFighting.com. New episode of BTL launches on the podcast network at noon Eastern, I believe. So check that out. It's a lot of fun. And enjoy the rest of your Thursdays, everybody, and have a heck of a morning.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.